don't know what to say right now. I mean, I'm not prepared for this, Chris. I haven't looked at these notes since Saturday
It's
night.
okay. I'm not expecting you don't have to be frustrated. This is just a we're squeezing this in. Just relax. 10 people are gonna listen to this. This is for you and me to do because it's fun and it's our connection. We don't know how many seasons we can keep doing this. Just do it.
Okay, go.
I'm waiting on you. 3, 2, 1. Mama Hayes.
Welcome, Canes fans, and welcome, son.
That was close. That was exciting for the second quarter and into halftime, but also a classic second half this season continues to be.
Well, the game was far better than I thought it was going to be. And I think that's kind of what you were just saying. I was pleasantly surprised. I stayed with it all the way through.
And it helps too that they had a chance at the end of the game to go tie it. That also makes it a little bit easier to stay with the game. Much better than last year's home loss, 45-3.
Quite a bit better. But I want to start out by saying kudos to Jordan. It's Jordan Travis, right?
Yes.
He really is good.
Yeah, it also helps. We saw him play in 2019. In that game when Willie Taggart was coaching and Willie Taggart's last game. So he's also been around for a long time.
He should be. What you're saying is he should be good by now.
I would hope so. He has enough experience around
However,
that.
we have quarterbacks that have been around for a while that are not improving to that degree.
Agreed. Again, I also think Jordan Travis wasn't a true freshman that year when we saw him, I believe. So he's been there for a few years now.
Oh.
So he's definitely knowing how to run the offense in today's college football where there's older and older players, and especially with the COVID year, messing with everyone's eligibility, more players like this. But yes, he's a gamer. Coleman is an unbelievable wide receiver. I mean, Florida State, I didn't think Mike Norvell was going to be able to do this, and he's been impressive. And when I get frustrated with Mario and not getting there in time, Norvell's the example of that, of take your time and recruit properly and get the right guys in, and then you'll look like that.
Yeah, well, they look good. I thought they looked good.
They did.
I'm choking it out, but I have to give them credit. I thought they looked good.
They did. And it was a fun game. It's the games that you want against Florida State and Miami. You want these classic games that are close, where it's a rivalry game. It's a ton of fun. You don't know which way it's going to go. You see the passion, the pageantry, the players playing at the top of their game and the top of their level. And I think we'll get more into the defense, but the defense continues to impress and again is going to be the foundation of this team, not just this rest of the season, but then for the years to come.
Amen, brother.
Now, the offense, on the other hand, which was impressive in the first half, and I will have to say, I love the play calling. I love that. And we found out that Emery Williams is going to make his start in the Clemson game. They didn't throw the ball deep at all. And then on the first play from their 1 yard line, they dropped it back and said, just throw it deep. And it looked good. It opened possibilities to run the ball better. Obviously, we had a Chaney had a great second quarter running the ball. But then I don't know what's going on, but we seem to not make any halftime adjustments. And if we do, we seem to decide to be very conservative. And this has really happened post Texas A&M game because the opposite happened where we didn't look great in the Texas A&M game, made adjustments in the second half, and Van Dyke had an amazing second half that led that team to victory. Since then, you think about the North Carolina game, we were up going into the second half, didn't make any great adjustments. And we then struggled to, have any offense or do anything else after that. Same thing with NC State. We only scored 6 points. So it was one of those that was just kind of tough for us to, it's tough to watch that. It's tough to watch to see no creativity, no excitement, just go really conservative as the game goes on.
I can't agree with you more. I just there, it's just something that stops at halftime. It just I don't get it. I was so excited at the beginning of that game because I saw some creative plays. I saw some aggressive plays. I saw things being tried that been tried for a while or before or whatever. And Emery, I mean, they were like, okay, you, what have we got to lose? Go for it. And then stop.
Exactly. And then they had to throw the ball down the field because they were down two touchdowns and a good thing happened. I mean, I think the safety for Florida State played the ball terribly. And, you know, thank God, Colby George just made an unbelievable catch to sprint away with everybody. But that's what also happens. And you have to remember, too, that like in college football and NFL football, the windows and perfect open receivers are not going to be there. And you got to trust your guys to make a play. And that's what happened. And I think Mario doesn't let guys play sometimes. And he's just like, let's just keep it without turning the ball over. Let's make sure we do all that and we can squeak out a win. But unfortunately, it doesn't bode well late in games. You know, I would have loved to see what Emery could have done, obviously, on that last drive. Unfortunately, he gave it his all. I mean, fortunately, he gave it his all, but unfortunately, it cost him his left arm and a surgery and is out for the season. And you could even see when Van Dyke got in, just the difference too, of like, I know we can get into the Van Dyke talk in a second, but just Van Dyke then hit Colby Young on his back shoulder, like four times in a row going down the field, and just how much that opens up. And it would have been good to see Emery get more of that confidence and skill set, since he does seem to actually have a pretty big arm.
Let's talk about the defense.
That would be great, because that is definitely the strong point of our team.
I was so impressed, and I couldn't single out one player more than another for a while. I mean, it just seemed like they were all contributing. They were all there. They were all doing something. Of course, James Williams was sort of overdoing it, but we, you know, we can, I guess, talk about that a little bit.
Yes, he's playing a little reckless for my liking right now.
The fact that he didn't get a target, he made up for the not getting the safety.
Well, I got a little thing for the ACC refs at the end of this segment, so don't you worry.
Okay. I can't wait. I can't wait to hear it. anyway, no, I think that our defense handled Travis as best as they possibly could. They were where they need to be when they need to be there.
I mean, it was one of Florida State's lowest offensive outputs when it comes to yardage, to play yardage per plays. I know we'll get into more stats later. They did slow them down. And, you know, one of the cool things to see from the entire unit was we didn't hear Reuben Bain Jr.'s name as much as we've had. Florida State knew that they needed to take care of Reuben Bain Jr. And other guys stepped up. Maui Noah, who I know you weren't a big fan of at the beginning of the year, has come on. I mean, talk about the opposite of Tyler Van Dyke and development. Maui Noah is the example of a guy that was just like, get him out of the game early in the season. And now I'm just like, the guy's running the defense. The guy knows where to be. The guy knows how to make plays. He's going to be not only an integral part again this year, but next year.
Well, his tackles to penalty ratio has improved vastly since the beginning of the year. So that speaks well for him.
And his sack production as well helps. But it says something too about just like the presence that Reuben Bain Jr. is, because Reuben Bain is taking up more eyes and focus from the offense. It opens up other areas for the defense, other players to get involved and make plays.
Well, we have so many. Now we have so many defensive players who are productive that it really throws the offense, the opposing offense, into a mode of where are we going to go? Which one are we going to stop? Which one are we going to hinder? So that's good.
That's good. It is good. And unfortunately, I'm going to bring it back here, and I know it's been said on other shows, but I was talking with you Saturday after the game, how Tyler Van Dyke, I think, we're seeing the end of Tyler Van Dyke with the University of Miami. And it's hard to say that about a college kid, especially a kid that's got a good amount of talent. But this is a kid that's been 2 years in a row projected, if he has even a decent season, to be an NFL first round draft pick, if not a top 10 pick. And right now he's looking to be lucky if he even gets signed as a free agent. I hope for him, I think the best thing would be to get a change of scenery, an offense that he's a little bit more familiar with and some confidence back. But whatever has happened the last 2 years to him and the Mario Cristobal coaching, because he's the only constant really, is Mario Cristobal as his coach and Tyler Van Dyke. And something's just amiss here because he is not the player we saw 2 years ago anymore. And I don't think he's going to be, and he just looks scared. That play at the end, Greg McElroy, the commentator, was right about it. He had Restrepo out of the break. That play was, you get Restrepo, you throw the ball right as Restrepo puts his foot in the ground. Tyler's got the arm to do it, but he paused. And by then it was too late. And then Florida State had it covered. And then he had to throw up a Hail Mary that was obviously going to get intercepted.
You can just watch him and know his confidence by his body language. His confidence is low to gone.
Yeah.
It just is not there. And he can't play this level of football with that. I'm sure that the team has sports psychologists working with him, but it's not sticking.
It is not at all. I think we're going to see Ja'Kari Brown again a little bit more. It'll be interesting to see if they put him out there. You know, I think Tyler is not your quarterback of the future now. You're already in a bowl game. It would be nice to obviously upset Louisville coming up here, who's a top 10 team now. And then is the opposite of what I was talking about earlier, of the patience of like, stay with Mike Norvell and let it recruit. Brian Brohm gets in there and has turned Louisville around like that. I'm a little frustrated about that part of it, that a team like Louisville with not the same recruiting resources and talent in the area has already turned their program around in 1 year and is battling for an ACC title while we continue to wait it out and wait it out and wait it out. So hopefully that comes together. But speaking of ACC, Mob, I have a new hero in the college football world, and that is Sean McDonough, the ESPN announcer. He went to town and obliterated the ACC officials, the ACC official replay system, and then just the ACC of like operating official committee, because he was furious about the safety call and how that was not called a safety. And then when James Williams didn't get thrown out of the game, he was furious about it and made it very clear that they had requested to talk to the ACC officials during the half and after that play, and got nothing from them. Well, got something and said that the ACC officials would come by and talk to them, only to be ghosted and not hear from them and continue to have issues. So I was so happy to hear Sean McDonough. I wish it honestly was a bigger game, sense of like more nationally covered, so that the ACC could have been really embarrassed. And Maisie's as fired up about it as I am.
I thought that was great.
She thinks it's great too, which is awesome. Like she's furious also too that these referees cannot get it together. It's amazing. Like I know you keep texting me during the games. You say, "What is a safety?" And that Clemson game was close enough. All right, but the fact that you have the evidence of Jordan Travis, this is why we have all this technology, is to show his knee down and the ball in the end zone. So there was no disputable evidence that was a problem. And then two, with James Williams's targeting call with his crown of his helmet right there, that it was very clear that he targeted. And again, they still did not call it. I don't know what this group is. It is embarrassing, especially at a high level. And it's going to cause the ACC like a national, like if Florida State had lost because of this ACC officiating, that's awful for the ACC because they don't get a team in the national championship playoff.
Right. Yes. They're hurting themselves. I don't know. What are they, the SEC rejects?
They might be the, like, the Pac-12 is going to be looking for some, maybe we can take the best of the Pac-12 referees that are going to be left over and the best of our ACC ones. We do have that now because we do have the new Pac-12 teams in our conference. So maybe we can try and get some of the best ones. That should have been our deal. Hey, Cal, Stanford, you guys can come here, but you need to bring your really good referees with us because this ain't it right now.
It's time for chocolate chip muffins and red beans and rice.
With a side of cornbread.
With a side of cornbread, that's right. And I am awarding the, and I can't believe I have not given him any awards all season up to this point. I'm awarding the banana chocolate chip muffins to George for that amazing touchdown catch and run, or catch and touchdown run, however you want to say it. That was a great play.
Yeah, usually it's the catch and then the touchdown run. So that would be a good way to do it. Like I said in the first segment, that was an amazing catch because you had the defender on it and the safety who mistimed the ball. But still, it's a lot of traffic coming in there. And he just nice and easy plopped right in his hands. And he just knew right away, okay, I have it. Time to go. Time to get in the end zone.
Yeah, it was just so casual and efficient.
Amazing.
For the red beans and rice, as we've discussed in the last segment, it was very difficult for me to choose any one defensive player because I had listed Cloyd, I had listed Marinoa, I had listed Bassanth. But I think that I will give it to Marinoa because he had 9 tackles and 2.5 tackles for loss and 2 big sacks. He kept Miami in the game. Almost single-handedly there for a while, but no, I can't say that because I've already said that the defense as a whole was really effective.
I wholeheartedly agree with that, and my side of cornbread is going to go to Don Chaney Jr. because he had a great second quarter, and this is a guy that I can't tell if he's in the doghouse or if they just want to use the freshman player, but he came out, he made the most of his carries, ended with 85 yards, was productive. Would have been great to see him continue to be productive with the offense, but I've already lamented about how we went super conservative in the second half. Mom, I'm just going to rat-a-tat-tat with topics that I have not sent to you at all. One of them will be, and I'm hoping you have not seen the new college football playoff rankings.
No, I haven't at
Perfect.
All.
Perfect.
Bad time. Sorry. No.
Do not apologize because this is going to make this segment better. But I think the first thing I'm going to start with is the news out of College Station that Jimbo Fisher is asked to walk away from the Texas A&M football program for a few couple of dollars, right around the $76 million range. You seem excited. Get in there, Mom.
If you hadn't brought it up, I would have brought it up. I was just like, you know, he led Florida State into mediocrity, and now he's led Texas A&M into mediocrity. So, gosh, I wonder where he's going to go next. Not Miami, I hope. We can't afford any more of that.
Well, the crazy thing is that he could actually go on a discount somewhere because it's in his contract that if he goes somewhere next year, A&M still has to pay him. So usually if someone fires and then you get hired, it's worked out where it's still like a buyout. A&M is still on the hook for the money. So he could actually go get another job for $70 million and get paid both at the same time. I've got to figure out a way to do this in my life.
How did he negotiate that kind of contract? I mean, it's amazing. He doesn't lose. There's nothing he loses by leaving. Nothing. I don't think. I mean, I could be wrong. There might be some little thing like dental coverage or something.
Maybe. But I think they're going to, if anything, you know, he can get on an Obamacare. He can get on Medicaid. There's ways that I think it's going to be okay.
No, I don't think he's going to get on Medicaid.
No, not on Medicaid. Sorry. I think he will again, be fine. And if anything, I imagine you could pay out of pocket right now for all those medical expenses that anything happens. So next question is, who takes that job?
Well, are you volunteering, Cristobal?
I am not. I cannot go through another coaching change right now. Like, we're tied to him no matter what. And again, I want to be clear. I am pro Mario Cristobal. I know it doesn't seem like it sometimes. I am actually very pro Mario Cristobal. I loved him when I played there. I just want to see a little bit not conservative stuff. And also just, I just don't want to end up with the same thing that we've had over and over, where it's a new coach, started over, and we're only going to start over again. I hope he succeeds. God, I do nothing more than I want him to succeed. Anyway, do you have any ideas about who might become the next head coach at Texas A&M?
No, I don't.
Okay. Well, I would.
Urban Meyer.
That's definitely a good choice. I think Dion's going to be, they're going to throw a lot of money at Dion.
Yeah. Dion would be a good fit there, I think.
It's almost too bad Dion took that Colorado job this year, because I think he could have gotten that Texas A&M job this coming year and would have been better. Now he's got to leave Colorado, but I think, I guarantee Texas A&M is already trying to talk to him to get more money. I know Oregon coach, whose name is escaping me right now, Daniel Lanning, I believe, already said vehemently that he is not going to be the head coach there. And then a fun name too is Dan Campbell with the Detroit Lions. While he's having success with the NFL team, Dan Campbell is a Texas A&M graduate. So I imagine too that they're going to throw a lot of money at him. They're just going to keep trying to throw money. You know who would be an interesting pickup that's not coaching on Saturdays, but during the week right now? It's a guy that coaches up in Michigan, Mr. Jim Harbaugh.
Oh, please. No, I wouldn't wish that on Texas A&M.
I wouldn't, I'd be okay with that. I don't know if they really want the Urban Meyer experience as much as they think they do.
I like the Deion Sanders choice.
Me too. It would be fun. I'd actually love that.
I think it's a personality fit made in heaven.
Me too. Me too. I love that. All right, so we know who our pick is for the Texas A&M job. Other than that, there wasn't too many other games. I mean, our game was definitely one of the exciting ones. UW continues to impress and all of that. Louisville hangs on against a Virginia team that we beat to be in the top 10, so the ACC representing. And you had a nice fun watch where you thought you were going to go to bed not too long after our game ended, about an hour or two after, only to stay up to watch Duke UNC battle it out until midnight.
Oh, yes, it was past midnight. Oh my gosh, I thought that game was never going to end. And it was like I got all ready for bed and I thought, okay, I'm going to come back out before I turn off the TV. And it was touchdown, and then it was touchdown, and then it was overtime, and then it was double overtime.
That's incredible. So they put up, UNC hangs on again. They're a weird team that's we thought was going to be in the top 10 of the college football playoff for sure, especially after they beat us, but can't seem to right the ship, which is too bad. But it is time to do.
Drake may not be back.
May not be back. I think they've missed a good opportunity to win and be productive. So we'll see. But I don't know. I said that once Sam Howell left, and then they ended up with a great quarterback. We can't get a great quarterback, but UNC gets one all the time. So I don't, doesn't make sense to me. But as I was trying to transition into, we are going to talk about the college football playoff rankings that you have not seen. I'm going to start with number 10 quickly here, and we are taking them on this weekend, Louisville. Finding themselves in the top 10.
I knew that.
Surprise,
That's one I knew.
surprising one to me is number 9, Missouri.
Yes.
Number 8 is the one that I'm saying is going to be there somehow, some way, if they're able to beat Georgia in the national title game. And that is the University of Alabama and their quarterback and everything. They are coming online at the exact right time. I feel so good about my prediction. Let's just say that. Followed then, or not followed, but next is University of Texas, who still continues to hang on. I think they're due for a loss at some point.
Wait a minute. Let's go back. Who does Alabama have left to play? Do you know?
I believe Alabama has Auburn, and they might have their cupcake schedule game coming up here that the SEC usually does. Yes, they are playing Chattanooga this weekend, and then they play Auburn after that. Yeah, the SEC always, the weekend before Thanksgiving is pretty much cupcake weekend for them so that they can all rest up in case they have their big games in Thanksgiving weekend and then into the SEC title game for those that make it, which is confirmed. It is Georgia and Alabama, no matter what, in the SEC title game.
Okay.
So we already said Texas is there. Number six and jumping up is University of Oregon. And they're only there because the first team in front of them is University of Washington. And everyone in Seattle has been telling me, really, we're hoping your Canes win on Saturday for us. And I said, I was trying to do our best so we could help you guys jump up into the top four. But I think if they keep winning, I think they got a good chance. They just got to take care of business. But they've got a tough stretch, actually. They're at Oregon State, who is the number 11 ranked team right now in the college football playoff. And then they're at home against Washington State, who's been sneaky good this year.
Good luck. Good luck, UW. Now that I know what Dubs is.
There you go. All right. So get into our final ones here. We've got number four, Florida State hasn't moved. Can you guess who number three is?
No, I should know this.
Who's been cheating and is in trouble?
Oh, Michigan.
There
Michigan.
you go. There's another big.
I have them written off because of all of this. I, in my mind, they are not, they're like, number 50, but they're not.
Nope, they're number three and still able to compete as of right now in the college football playoff. Number two is another Big Ten team who has dropped down.
Yeah, it's Ohio State. So they dropped out of first. Well,
Which
that
I
breaks
don't
my heart.
get because Marvin Harrison Jr. had his best game and I thought they looked all right. I feel that they should stay at number one if you're going to rank them number one the other week. And the new number one and back on top for the first time in the college football playoff rankings this year is
Georgia, who else?
no other. So Georgia, I think, has a cupcake game. And then I believe they have Georgia Tech after that, who, hey, maybe Georgia Tech surprises us after this and gets a little upset against the rivals up there. Yeah, they have, oh no, excuse me. They have Tennessee.
Yeah, I thought they
Georgia
played.
at Tennessee. So that could be, Tennessee beat Alabama last year, Who knows? Maybe I'm proven wrong. Or it helps too. I don't know. Who knows? If they win this one.
Tennessee could be a sleeper.
Could be. All right. We got a rat-a-tat-tat here. We got predictions for this weekend against Louisville. We're running out of time. I have us winning this game. I'm gonna say it. I wasn't thinking this the last couple of days, but I say we surprise. It's at home. It's still a Louisville team trying to figure itself out. It's going to be messy. It's going to be sloppy. It's going to be a classic Miami Mario Cristobal win, possibly in overtime. We'll go overtime. We just keep winning in overtime at home. And I've got us winning 31-28 on a field goal.
I'm not as confident as you. So I'm going to say I have to say we're going to win, even though I'm it's half-hearted. I'm going to say 24 to 21.
All right. Well, that's a lot of confidence for our Canes by both of us that they win this weekend. I think that's impressive for us. I think we're growing and trusting this team a little bit more, especially that defense.
Okay, before we go, I have to shout out to one of our listeners. We actually have a listener that I can confirm, and that's my friend Janet Ross. And she, not only is she listening, but she is an FSU fan.
Oh, man. Well,
And
congratulations to her.
she still listens, not just to our FSU podcast, but to pretty much all of them.
Well, that explains why that you were so nice about FSU at the beginning of this podcast. This makes
No.
so much more sense now.
That had nothing to do with that. I would have said the same thing.
That's good. I was thinking about you a bunch when my girlfriend Teal was talking about the tomahawk chop and how annoying that was. I'm like, oh yeah, you should talk to mom about that because she really hates that. So maybe that's a conversation over Christmas. But we have our own chair. We don't have the tomahawk chop. We spell it out as Sebastian does. Mom, you know how to break us down. Let's do it.
C-A-N-E-S-A.
Haynes. This has been another episode of Walking On with Chris Hayes featuring Mama Hayes.
Go Canes!